There's a poem on page 10 that starts with the year 1911. It seems a little awkward to piece out parts of the book, but would you be interested in reading that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. What I'll maybe do, Paul, is I'll just read from page 10 to 12, because I think that little section maybe is exactly, I think, speaking about what your question just evoked in me as an answer, because it talks about the incursion of humans onto the Skeena River itself. And I think it wraps up fairly well by page 12, because this is this huge poem. Somebody recently asked me, have you ever done a public reading from cover to cover? And I was like, are you kidding me? People would fall asleep. Like, it's a 96 page poem, but so you're right. It is difficult to extricate little bits of it, but this thank you for asking me for reading this one. 1911, black and white nitrate negative construction of Grand Trunk Pacific Railway bridge over Skeena River. Snow low down on mountains, deciduous trees barely in bud, girders and 2x4 lattice work shorn and scalped, shorelines never traveled, tracks balanced, suspended steam engine, a crane lowering section of bridge into place. Skeena halfway crossed, bridgeless center, nothing but river, nothing but water. The young man is dwarfed by the bridge, the crane, the river, the sky. His hand is extended. The photo doesn't capture it, but imagine a saucer hurled for the sheer joy of watching fine bone china slice air, slice water, launched from the grease-stained hands of a railroad engineer. 1911, a river still uncrossed by railway track, a river still knowing the world in Skeena time. I am the river. I've touched bends of sandbars set to disappear, tips of drifted down pine needles, the husk of a hare from a rutting bull moose, carcasses of deer, red, 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 long summer days, huckleberry full and still. Still, you do not believe I am small. You refuse to believe. Insist I can take anything, forgetting that single solitary second of split water, of splitting me. You, young man, are still finishing the job. That day, I became small, split halfway crossed, and railway trestles taste black, taste creosote, black planks, black beams, blackened nails built crisscrossed strong enough to shoulder the black bulk of trains.
Yeah, the imagery in that particular poem and throughout the book just reminds me of, you know, the rivers around here. There are references, maybe not in that poem, to Devil's Club. In that poem, the Huckleberry, and, you know, you go on. And I can imagine myself being there because I've been in the wilderness of the Olympic National Park and other wilderness where the, you know, the terrain is very similar, and at least I can relate. I look at this poem on the page, and I see someone who has some sense of field theory. And I see you, I see the page as you're reading, and I get some sense that you are using the page as a score for reading it aloud. So can you tell us a little bit about the process of figuring out how the lineation works in this?
Yeah, it was indeed a process. So the last book of poetry, Geographies of a Lover, the materiality of the word relationship on the page was very much meant to sort of represent and elicit sort of an orgasmic rush filled feel to the poems themselves. I'm very interested in the kind of physical, material way that words work together on a page in order to both push a reader to a new way of reading, but also to physically manifest the topic, the sort of concepts that the words themselves are graphing, are symbolically representing. So this poem was one where I tried to give myself some latitude for experimentation. I have to say that I failed in many respects. I sort of would move back into a sort of more formulaic, structured, left justified, lineated work. And then there would be these ruptures in moments. Most specifically, I can think of things like rain, and like long lists of mountain names and sort of, you know, a cataloging, as you said, with reference to field notes, a cataloging of flora and fauna. But then I would kind of go back into this left justified sort of stanza kind of thing. And when I first started talking with Patricia Young, she was like, why don't you just like blow lineation out of the, like out of the water here, I guess, pun intended, just blow it up, just really start to read. When I was writing Skeena, I was actually, funnily enough, and don't ask me to name any of the people, but I was really getting into blues music. I mean, I've always kind of, full disclosure here, being a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, and kind of early Boss, Bob Dylan kind of bluesy sound. And I was moving toward a real interest in repetition and sound and kind of echoing of words, sort of almost like a river relationship, things mirroring each other as we move through. And at times I think that became more overbearing, and it didn't let the line do the work of the sound. So that was something that Patricia and I really worked through, was sort of spending much more time reading the poem aloud and allowing the lineation in some ways to mirror breath, to mirror tide, to mirror movement of water, and to downplay what I think I was initially attempting to achieve. I was attempting to achieve that kind of sound motion lineation simply by repetition, but it just became overbearing. It wasn't nuanced enough, whereas actually working at the scale of the line, I think, really allowed me to insert more of the sound in some ways of a bluesy feel to the river without that overbearing repetition. Mm-hmm. So I think I did manage to go back in and really, explode lineation when I just finally, it's funny how sometimes we do meet the second set of eyes of somebody else who says, clearly this is what you're aiming for. Why don't you just go for it? And I was like, okay, yeah. So it definitely was a process, Paul.